The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Holly Carter, founder and executive director of ByKids, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving on AM 970 The Answer WNYM in New York City.
We occupy a world where people who are living a problem are rarely, if ever, heard. And when they are, it's typically through the voice of some adult. But what about the children who have grown up into these circumstances? What does the world look like and feel like from their perspective? The organization that is bringing us the personal stories of these young people in a very creative way so we can better understand the world around us is ByKids. And it is a delight to have with us this evening their founder and executive director, Holly Carter. Good evening, Holly, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Thank you, Denver, for having me here. It's an honor.
The concept of ByKids is so interesting. What was the genesis of this idea, Holly?
You know, it probably goes back to my childhood. But I think my background was as a print journalist at the New York Times. And I saw some aspects in that world of global issues being covered very superficially and very often by people who would fly from one country to another, often without the language or without cultural bearings. And I felt that was a real disservice to our democracy, that if we want to live in a democracy, we all have it on our shoulders to be informed citizens. And if the news media was not allowing us to hear really impactful, wide stories from the perspective of the people for whom these policies or these disasters or these joys actually affected, we might have a disconnect. And then I had kids, and my kids were growing up, and I started, you know, my thing is if you get annoyed and then get really outraged by something, you better stop complaining and start taking action. Do something, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
So the best I could do was to say, at that point, I'd left print journalism and had gotten into documentary filmmaking. I saw the power of film in a very tangible way. It allows people to learn something that could otherwise in print or through the voice of an old white man, seem pedantic. And film allows you to learn about something through your heart. So my thing is really I'm wired as a social activist. I want to make change. I want to do it effectively and painlessly. Documentary film had, until I got into it, felt a little bit like medicine. And somehow this alchemy of giving a kid a voice, often from places where we don't hear from anybody, let alone through the innocence of a child, seemed like a miraculous way to start really equalizing the news diet of Americans who I think were being cut off, not just for philosophical reasons, but real economic reasons that, you know, having been at the New York Times or watching the networks close their offices in foreign countries because they couldn't afford it. I felt like if we want to be global citizens, which I think many people want to be, we have to prepare our kids for that kind of role, and we were losing the ability to make informed choices as a citizenry. So it was that alchemy that made ByKids possible.
Yeah. Oh, I still think we are so self-absorbed as a culture. I mean, I watch the nightly news on a regular basis and almost have to go to BBC at the end of it to find out what's happening in the rest of the world because we're so focused on ourselves. Have you always liked documentary films, or was this an acquired taste for you?
You know, interesting. I mean, I'm all about, you know, that adage that real life is often more dramatic and crazy than fake.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been driven by story sharing, right? So my crazy uncle who would tell a fabulous story, those memories and those lessons always stuck with me. So
yeah.
I think I grew up in a family of storytellers. And children, certainly as my husband and I were raising our kids here in New York, they don't, you know, nobody needs a morality play. They need to, you know, they need to hear, when I was a kid and I did X, Y, and Z, that's how people learn. So, you know, the reality is I am a really bad writer. Writing is wickedly painful and laborious for me. I mean, writer's block, I've redefined what that means. Literally, yeah. The first thing I wrote for the New York Times was on the big business of bird watching.
Right.
It took me 3 months. I had to research every last thing. So I got to a point in my career where I said, you know, it might be nice to get paid for doing things that are fun and easy.
Mm.
And writing is not that for me. And I sat down. I just took a really hard look at my own lifestyle and likes and realized that I spent all my free time either at galleries looking at photography,
mm-hmm.
like Salvador – no, that's not his name – Salgado's work mm-hmm. of documenting these diasporas. That's real. That's documentary. Or at films. And I started a documentary film festival, and I began to meet people in that field. And what I loved about it, about filmmaking in general and documentary just because these people are so passionate, was that journalism is a very solitary endeavor, right? You write alone. Somebody edits alone. It goes out to the millions of people that read your stuff, but you're never connected with those mm-hmm. people. And, man, the messiness in the community of documentary filmmaking for me meant the world. So
yeah.
I started this film festival so I could meet people like Rick Burns and Albert Maysles, and then I'm like, well, if they can do it, I should do it, and
there
made
you go.
A documentary.
The rest is history. Let's talk a little bit about storytelling. Because, you know, it has become one of the more overused words, sort of like innovation and collaboration. And I know in the nonprofit sector, everything I go to is, oh, storytelling, storytelling. How would you define or describe storytelling?
That's a great question and something really potent to think about these overused words. So our mantra is that we teach empathy through storytelling. So those are two of those words that, mm-hmm. to me, also are very over. Empathy is overused,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure. You're right.
Here's how we define it. We define it as the human act of being in community. And in our case, sometimes it's connecting people in different countries, in different classrooms. It's connecting them in the experience of a shared anecdote.
Hmm.
It's the finding the humanity, not statistics. You know, I don't think any of us, well, maybe there are a few of us out there, not me, who responds to statistics.
No.
You know, we made this film about an AIDS orphan in Mozambique. And to hear the statistic of there are 500,000 AIDS orphans, you shut down. It's too
much.
It's overwhelming. So to me, storytelling is finding the human kernel in an anecdotal way that's personal and emotional
mm-hmm.
and sharing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as simple as saying, my name's Holly. What's your name? What's your story? Your
yeah.
story is what makes you different and the same, all in one, you know, in your little nugget.
Absolutely. Everyone has a story. You have said that you believe kids make the best reporters. Why do you think that's the case?
Oh, they're so amazing. They see the world, and they have a nose for BS, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about your ego or your politics. They report the way they see things totally authentically.
Yeah, unfiltered.
Unfiltered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so refreshing. And I think on some level, you know, we live in a world that's very divisive, very siloed. I think at the core of what we're trying to do with these stories is reconnect viewers and particularly students with the, as I say, the shared humanity. What do we all have in common? Not our religion, not our race, not where we live, but we were all kids.
Yeah. That's absolutely
really
right.
Simple.
Yeah. Well, share with us the process of going about making one of these films.
So your listeners can't tell that I'm gray-haired, and I went gray-haired because the process is long, but I will explain it. You know, basically we start in New York with the board, and we pick a theme that we call a globally relevant story. So I'll use a very specific example. We knew we wanted to do a film about displacement, and we sat at a board table in New York talking about where we should do that. And George Clooney was flying to Darfur, and you know, every bar mitzvah kid was raising money for Save Darfur.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the displacement story we wanted to tell. And this, as I'm dating myself, goes back a while. By Kids has been around for 11 years now. We had a Colombian board member who raised his hand and said how interesting it might be for us to look at displacement through a Colombian child. We're like, oh, tell us more. And he said, well, Colombia's got, at that point, the second largest displaced population in the world. And he explained why.
Mm-hmm.
40 years of civil war,
right.
Drug trade. The Europeans and the Americans were driving that drug trade. He said, how interesting that we could tell a story that, you know, some of these foreign stories that we tell, you might be able to say, well, AIDS in Africa is far, far away. This one, for the first time in our repertoire, was actually a subject that was an American kid could mm-hmm. see, oh, man, if I snort a line of coke, that kid in Maria, who is now in Malala's new book, Maria, who lives in a displaced area in Cali, was affected by my action and that ability to connect. So we pick the globally relevant story in theory. We then partner with a nonprofit, in this case in Colombia, wherever we are working, to help us identify a cohort of children from which we can pick our one filmmaker.
Mm.
We then pick from our stable of miraculous, amazing, talented film mentors somebody who's interested, available, excited, maybe language literate, to go to said chosen child. And they work together for a month. They get a camera and the guidance of the mentor. And the child is the one who is able to tell their story with the help of the mentor to shape the story. They shoot everything except the B-roll.
Yeah.
And they narrate these short 27-minute films.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I've often said, I remember going to see An Inconvenient Truth, and the lights came up almost, and there was a long list of things you could do. You know, the mandate of these films by kids is that the film itself, sharing the story of this particular child, whether it's dealing with displacement or the ravages of AIDS or climate change or whatever, is that you could actually know enough and care enough
yeah.
to do something
mm-hmm.
about it. And so that our methodology really includes the film being the cornerstone of what starts sometimes very hard conversations. We like in classrooms with teachers guided somewhat by our educational material so that kids can learn how to have hard conversations about race and poverty and all kinds of other things that they are not typically exposed to, particularly these global stories.
Yeah. You mentioned those marvelous filmmakers who serve as mentors. How have you been able to engage them, and who have some of them been?
Oh, God, I love these people so much.
I bet.
They're everybody from Neil Baer, who I happen to be on the board of Colorado College with,
mm-hmm.
and we met, and he mentored our first film. He was at the time the showrunner for Law & Order SVU. Joyce Chopra, who is in the permanent collection at MoMA for her amazing, groundbreaking film, Joyce at 34, where she brought a camera into the labor room when she had her daughter. Albert Mazels, who made his last film, mentored a young Muslim girl here in New York. What a remarkable thing to have. I think he was 86 at
yeah.
the time, this old Jewish legend with a young Muslim girl whose family was willing to have them work together. It was miraculous in many ways. And the whole Anya Barron has just finished a film for us done by a Syrian refugee in Berlin and is now starting work on a film about anti-Semitism in Germany. These people...
Some great names.
You know, these are... They're big-name people, but more importantly, they're really big-hearted.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Films by Kids returns for Season 2 on public television, which premieres nationwide on January 29th, and will in New York on Channel 13 starting on Sunday, March 3rd. Films by Kids returns for Season 2 on public television, which premiered nationwide on January 29th, and will in New York on Channel 13 starting on Sunday, March 3rd. You have four new films by these young filmmakers. Say a word about each, starting with Michael Martin, from right here in Harlem.
So Mike Martin is a 19-year-old who at 17 was sent to Rikers. And we knew that we wanted to do a film around juvenile justice, criminal justice reform, the closing of Rikers, the raising of the age, not just in New York but in North Carolina. I don't know if your listeners know that until very recently, children were treated as an adult. And my two
mm-hmm.
times visiting Rikers is a rude awakening to what that actually means. We've got a film about real societal change happening in one generation in Senegal. We have a young girl who made a film about how had she been born really 20 years ago, she would have been forced to be married probably at 10 or 11. She would have been cut genitally, mm-hmm. and she now is a happy kid, free to go to school, choose the spouse of her choice, and go on about a great life.
Fantastic.
We have another film that was shot in Nicaragua, done by a young girl who talks about climate change ravaging coffee growing, which her family has relied on for generations and very proudly. And last but not least, we have Out of Aleppo, which is made by Mo Shasho, who's a young Syrian refugee in Berlin who talks very poignantly about his family's readjustment to life in Germany and his hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm. And you have a narrator for the series, don't you?
We have a great narrator for the second season. Ashley Judd is doing it again, and she too is magnificent. You know, the first season, we were so lucky and grateful, and there were a few people in my circle who said, oh, Ashley Judd, that name sounds vaguely familiar. I think now with the Time magazine cover, there's probably not anybody in the world who doesn't know Ashley, and she's spectacular. She takes this very seriously and is just a real asset to
us. Yeah, oh, absolutely. A wonderful glue to hold the whole thing together for viewers. So, Holly, what's the impact on an audience of hearing these stories about these very complex situations you just described in the voice of children?
So I think I will answer it anecdotally. You know, we can proudly say when we digest all the platforms that we have put in place to distribute these films with the educational material, we have public television that reaches 84 million households. We have an amazing partnership with Discovery Education that reaches into half the schools in America with our films
great.
And curriculum. We have CBS News, we have a nice partnership with them that reaches millions of people. Public television, PBS Learning Media does a great job getting it out to teachers. When we digest all of that, we have the reach of 246 million students and viewers. That, you know, as I say, when statistics come at people like Big Whoopi do, right? But I will tell you, I have been in the room when the lights come up and we can have a conversation about something like juvenile justice. People, you know, the questions that come out prove that these kids can digest things at a very sophisticated high level.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I think we had a couple of middle school kids at the premiere screening of I Could Tell You About My Life, which is Mike Martin's film. And these kids are able to digest something. You know, this is a film about what it means to be a young black male in America.
Yeah.
There are deep and potent elements of what it means to be black, what it means to be poor, what it means to be incarcerated. And these children were asking questions of Mike that were just, you know, like, why did you go to jail? And Mike said something that hushed everybody in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say it's because I'm poor or black. He took some time. He said, that's a very good question. Nobody's ever asked me that. He said, the reason I went to Rikers is because I was bored in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, this little kid got elicited what could be the biggest solution of the criminal justice problem that we have in America. Don't let kids get bored in middle school or elementary school. Or they're going to turn, you know, Mike talked at length about not only was it not having a classroom of support, that the bad behavior of the other kids, he was probably the smartest kid in middle school class.
Yeah.
And the teacher was so busy dealing with behavioral stuff. And then he said, and then I'd be done with 8 hours of having to put up with that and not learning anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'd walk 5 blocks to the basketball court and the city didn't have resources, that was locked. So we'd walk 20 blocks for another basketball, that was locked. So you're like that kid. And it just those kind of conversations are the things that prove that this is invaluable. Another example is we've been very lucky to have Poet Against Prejudice, which is our young Yemeni filmmaker who moved to Brooklyn when she was 15, mentored by Albert Maysles. And we have done a lot of dog and pony shows with a spectacular film, both with Faiza, the filmmaker, her brother-in-law is the highest-ranking Muslim in the New York City police force, just a magnificent family. And we've taken this film out a lot. I did it recently in Bergen County that invites us during Anti-Violence Week. And it's interesting that they equate Islamophobia and the kind of torture that Faiza was put through for being Islamic in post 9/11 New York. It's also really a film about bullying and about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, there have been opportunities for this film that have blown me away. So I sat on a panel next to the guidance counselor at one of these Bergen County high schools. And he says to the 2,000 high school students for whom he works, and there's an element of, you know, keeping the demeanor, right?
Yeah.
He says, I saw this film a few days ago, so I was prepared for this. I had tears streaming down my face.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'll tell you why. I came here. I've never told any of you guys this. I came from the Dominican Republic. See the scar on my lip? I got beaten up because I didn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look like all my classmates. And I watched this film of a young Muslim woman, and I saw myself in it. And that, and then the woman on this side who ran the anti-bullying program said, I've never shared that I came. I think she came from Morocco. And I was bullied horribly, and I've held that. That was a shameful thing. I've held it in. So I think my point is that these kind of heartfelt translations of personal stories can open other people to
yeah.
be able to tell their story. And in that, you know, I think we've seen that in the Me Too movement, that
mm-hmm.
it took one brave person to say, this is what happened to me, and the flood happens.
Great example. That really is very, very powerful. You know, you reeled off those partnerships a moment ago, but I know how difficult it is to forge those partnerships with public television and Discovery and CBS. What's the key, you think, to making those partnerships work?
You know, it was an idea that had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And people that have seen it, heard it, experienced it, can't get to helping fast enough. And so I think it's the power of the idea that nobody was doing this. There are lots of people that give film cameras to disadvantaged kids. We have a few amazing programs here in New York. But it was really something different to be saying, we Americans need to be hearing about the world in a way that we can digest. And it was filling, you know, maybe the CBS deal is because they really understood that this was something they weren't doing.
Right.
I think teachers are, you know, I have a secret weapon. I have a few secret weapons. One of them is Seth Godin, who's a beloved advisor to us. And he said, your audience are teachers. Teachers will see one of these 9 films, fall in love, because there's nothing like this, that in 27 minutes you can be talking about what it means to be a black young man in America
yeah.
in a way that their kids will relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is successfully teaching empathy in our classroom. And certainly global citizenry is not, you know, we don't teach ethics, we don't teach civics anymore. This fills a void.
So, yeah, it brings together a lot of things.
Yeah, I think we've been really smart in being in front of the right people. So we've made a real purpose out of getting to the NAIS conference, which is for all private school
mm-hmm.
heads, went to that once and presented, have been to the Worldview Conference at UNC. We go to South by Southwest, EDU. You know, getting in front of the teachers who not only can learn to like one and then say they want all 8 of the others, they also come back to it every year. So if they're teaching, you know, who knew? Who knew that teachers could relate to what we do for their kids that are learning English? You know, it's
yeah.
all of our films are subtitled.
Mm-hmm.
There's a, you know, we didn't set out to say we're going to be an ESL tool, but there you go. So I think, you know, I think it's the idea.
Yeah.
And I often say, you know, I got into this because, as I say, I found writing so laborious. I love film. I was raising my own kids, and I saw a lack around how to teach them empathy other than being a kind parent myself sometimes. If not always. The reality is community service is a flawed model in this country.
Uh-huh.
I think schools, you know, we often say schools don't teach in the right way. So our kids are not only learning through moving image because they're on their phones all the time, and YouTube is like 12 times more used video than non-video.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids are absorbing their entire world through moving image, And they're learning to express themselves through the moving image, just like me. They don't like to write either.
Yeah, no, that's right.
And we had to come, you know, to me, I want to get to the people out there who are really trying to forge educational revolutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Emerson Collective with Lorene Jobs.
Yep.
There are people really trying to blow up the model of school. And I think we fit really nicely into this idea.
I would agree. Yeah, you have to meet these kids where they are. Not where we would like them to be, maybe, or not where we were ourselves. And that's what this does. You know, despite this embrace, sometimes fundraising can be difficult for projects like this. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, you know, we're here. So 11 years later, we are here. We're very lucky to have founding funding from the Ford Foundation, which gave us a real imprimatur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, funders like to not be the first ones in, and I'm very grateful to the Ford Foundation. We have a few large foundations like the Henry Nias Foundation that has been with us from the beginning. And we have 6,000 supporters who, you know, I've had my nephew give me Tooth Fairy money. We had a lot of luck with Charity Buzz,
mm-hmm.
where wonderful friends of mine have donated a lunch or a dinner with themselves. Bill Ackman was very generous
yep.
recently and gave a one-hour lunch, and somebody was willing to pay $57,000 for that, and we were very grateful to Bill. I think people just get this. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think when we live in this frantic news cycle, we live in a divided country, we live in a kind of frightening world. When Buy Kids comes along, in whatever way people have been introduced to us, the idea that we can strengthen our children and their capacity to participate successfully in the world is a really magic bullet. And we just, you know, we're lean and mean.
Yeah.
We are tiny. And, you know, it took us, just so your listeners understand, it took us 8 and a half years to make season one. It's taken us 2 years to make season two, and the goal is that we can make season three in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So we've sped it all up.
There you go. Well, you are lean and mighty. Describe a little bit the corporate culture at Buy Kids, and what do you think makes it a very special place in which to work?
Well, you'd have to ask people that work for Buy Kids, but what they tell me is that having purpose is really important.
Yeah.
And there's just, you know, the purpose is very clear on this. It's simple. And people get really motivated by that. And we've got a team of part-time workers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only full-time member of the staff. We have a board that is incredibly engaged. So we'll do events for us. We'll do film production for us. But I think When you have the ability to put time and or money into something that has such tangible impact, right? So we're really out there. This is not a little thing. This is the mighty engine that could. That reach is remarkable. And when people who have come into the fold and chosen to support us have amazing ways to engage with their own children.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like the best emails I get are when we have a screening and a conversation, and I'll get an email from a parent on the way home or on the train or wherever saying, I haven't had a significant conversation with my kid in as long as I can remember. It's always, did you do your homework? Did you study for the SAT? And suddenly we were talking about how lucky they are to be able to go to school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's that. That's the DNA of the corporate culture, is
mm-hmm.
that it allows people to connect with each other in a way that they don't get otherwise.
Let me close with this, Holly. Aside from speeding up one season to the next, what's your vision for the future of Buy Kids, and where would you like to see the organization, let's say, 5 years from now?
5-year goal is an annual budget of $1.5 million that
mm-hmm.
allows us to, you know, we basically begged and borrowed to get us to this point. We have, you know, Final Cut post-production house donates all of their post-production work. There are lots of people that are doing pro bono work. In order to deliver professional national television at the quality we like and do it on time, we need real money to pay people. So the goal is simply 5 new films, season 3 for 2020, and every year beyond that. And we need some strategic partners in not even just the fundraising sphere, but people that can really understand how the more our American classrooms have this kind of content, the better off we all are.
For sure. Well, Holly Carter, the founder and executive director of BiKids, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Where can people learn more about the organizations, the films, the kids, and help support this work if they're so inclined?
Thank you so much. It's www.bykids.org.
Thanks, Holly. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.